Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Welcome to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's Fantasy Sports Today. I'm your host, Mike Blewett, along with Kevin Walsh here for the next 3 hours. As we take you around the world of sports, specifically in terms of fantasy. A lot going on. It's that time of year. For those of you that are NHL fans, you're in the throes of your conference finals. The NBA conference finals are getting going. We have a lot of Major League Baseball action, which we'll get to really here in the first hour. A lot going on last night. A lot of good performances, which we'll get into in a moment. Talk a little bit about the NFL. Big news being Mark Ingram being suspended this week. Kurt Warner also talking about a potential comeback, which he then backed away from. We'll talk about that at length in the second hour. But first, I'll bring in my co-host, Kevin Walsh. Kev, it's good to hear from you again. Okay. So, little technical issue. We'll bring Kevin in a moment. But in any event, we'll get to baseball because a lot went on last night. Some news, obviously, regarding Matt Harvey. We'll get to him in a moment because he threw four solid innings. But really, guy that has been tearing up the league yet again this year is Max Scherzer. And Scherzer puts on another dominant performance last night. He goes seven innings, four hits, no walks, only gives up one run and 11 more strikeouts. His ERA drops down to 1.69, and he is the first pitcher in Major League Baseball to get his seventh win on the season as he goes to 7-1. Beyond that, we had, and, you know, the sad part for Arizona pitcher Matt Cook is that he pitched a pretty good game as well. He has been good as of late, and he threw eight strong last night, gave up three runs, which was a little bit too much when you're going up against Matt Scherzer, who's mowing down the Arizona Diamondbacks lineup. I mean, they got very little done. Peralta actually had two hits off of Scherzer. But on the national side of things, Trey Turner with a hit. Anthony Rendon hits a bomb, a decisive, really insurance run in the eighth inning. Anthony Rendon, yet another home run, so he's coming back nicely off of injury. And Max Scherzer himself helped out his own cause. He goes 2-for-3. With an RBI. So great outing for Scherzer. Doolittle gets the save. A funny moment there last night. Doolittle gets driven in on a cart last night, and his teammates are giving him a standing O for getting a ride in to the mound. Just kind of a funny baseball moment. But in any event, Max Scherzer continues to mow down the opposition. Again, Kevin Walsh will be joining us in a minute to get his commentary. Moving over to another game. With another big performance is Manny Machado. So I don't want to get Kevin's thoughts when he's able to jump on air. Machado yesterday, 2-for-4, two runs scored, two home runs, and six ribbies. One of those home runs was a grand slam. So right now, Machado hitting .354, OPS well over one, and he is on the year. Let's see, he had two homers yesterday. Let me just get his seasonal totals. But Machado is going to be talked about now incessantly with how bad the Orioles are. They're 11-27 on the year. Machado right now, that was his 12th homer, 35th RBI. So putting up some big numbers early, and there's going to be constant talk of him being the free agent after the year, and what did the Orioles do with him? This team needs to be blown up. I mean, they entered the season with a pitching staff that everybody was looking at sideways. They didn't really address it in any significant way. It was just hope against hope. And now here they are, 11-27. Nobody goes to the ballpark. Machado can't even get them there. And I believe that's Kevin Walsh.
You hear me?
Do we hear Kevin Walsh? I heard you tap the microphone.
I gave a little tap
into the show. A little Morse code.
Exactly. A little Morse code. That's how we get it done.
So Machado, 6 RBIs yesterday. Like I said, O's are 11-27. Really just a really bad baseball team at this point. They are in last place in the East. And talks are going to heat up for Machado to get moved. I don't see why the Orioles wouldn't move him. The price was astronomically high during the offseason. It should remain astronomically high right up until the deadline, and then maybe they can drop down the price a little bit. But Machado's only 25 years old. He is the type. There's obviously been a huge depression in the salaries in Major League Baseball, but he is one of the few right now that could command a big dollar amount. So somebody could use him as a rental and let him go, like what happened with CC Sabathia before he ended up at the Yankees. Or it could be a high profile team that uses Machado to try to lock up a World Series.
Well, I have a couple Machado questions. The first one is, because I was talking to a buddy about this, and I don't necessarily know if I could recall, and perhaps you do, where a guy who's putting up pretty much MVP quality numbers is going to be moved like Machado is. Because I know he's having an incredible year. You just mentioned the 6 RBI game, right? Like, someone of his level being such a lock to be traded, that feels rare, no?
Yeah, look, you could argue that he's one of the very best players in baseball. Last year, he had a rough first half of the year, closed it strong. He's obviously on fire right now. Giancarlo Stanton won the MVP in 2017 in the National League, and he got traded in the offseason. That has happened a couple of times in baseball history. So while I know it wasn't mid-season, I mean, the Marlins did move Giancarlo Stanton. Unique scenario there. They obviously tore down the entire franchise. I mean, to think of their outfield last year was Yelich, Stanton, and Ozuna. And now they don't have any of them is depressing. But we understand why they're doing it. So, a player of that caliber, Stanton just got moved.
Yeah.
But somebody that's 25 years old and is going to be a huge free agent, I mean, it's a big deal. It's a big deal because the second that they do that, you know they're tearing it down. But everybody knows that they have to tear it down.
I mean, he sat there, right? Leads the American League in batting average and RBIs. He's tied for second throughout all of baseball in home runs. So he certainly would be in any type of MVP conversation if you were to entertain an MVP conversation in May. I think the question is, right, because I know our Yanks have been talked heavily about
Machado.
They're
almost minus 70. They're almost a minus 70 run differential right now, the Orioles.
Yeah, terrible.
And that's 38 games in.
I heard the Dodgers, and then there was talks that the Cubs were going to be interested, and I'm assuming the Yanks would be interested as well. The question becomes...
Yankees have loved Machado for years.
So
they absolutely need him? No, but the Yankees would take him. The Yankees are never out of the running for players like this.
Well, that's the thing, though. Is it a situation where a team like the Yankees, all of a sudden they see that the other two teams courting him come deadline time, or even perhaps sooner, are the Dodgers and the Cubs, and then there's a real worry like, oh man, he could go to either of those teams, win a World Series, and then he never entertains the idea of coming back to play in pinstripes. So where they feel like they then need to be aggressive to get Machado. I mean, obviously, putting him in their everyday starting lineup is great for them right now, right? Like, they're also trying to win a World Series.
Sure. I think that's an age-old debate, whether you should be the team going after the guy now, because you don't want to give him an opportunity, for example, to go to Los Angeles, and he loves playing there, and they have some success, and then why would I leave? But
right.
At the end of the day, Machado's going to kind of make that decision on his own. And I'm trying to think. I can't remember if he's a Boris guy or not. I can't remember that, but I'm going to look that up. In any event, look, Machado would play, presumably, you keep Chris Bryant at third, Machado comes in, he takes over at short, and then Addison Russell and Javier Baez can battle out at bats or whatever they want to do. They can make a variety of different moves there.
Some of those guys would end up having to be moved, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that too. Yeah, Javi Baez might come back. But, you know, think about what the Marlins did. So here's the unique thing. I mean, the Marlins were sitting on that huge contract, which is why they were willing to take less for Stanton.
Mm-hmm.
The Orioles, to this point, have not entertained taking anything less than what they feel Machado is worth, which is going to be multiple prospects, and you would expect it to be pitching prospects, especially.
What do you think the
Yankees are obviously well-positioned to do that from a pitching and positional player standpoint, and Duhar, Frazier would be guys that would be on the move for the Yankees in any big deal, whether it's for Machado or another arm, which I do expect them to do.
Because it's easier, I think, for us, right, to gauge at least the Yankees just in terms of how they value certain players and knowing the farm system. You know, you typically know the farm system of your team better than the others. I'm curious if the Orioles would demand a Gleyber Torres and basically say, you know what, we are not going to move this guy in division, whether it be, you know, stupid or not, that he's going to perhaps sign there anyway come next offseason, but we're not going to move him unless you give us Gleyber Torres plus a number of other things. But I wonder if there's going to be a situation like that where the Yankees would then have to make that type of move. And honestly, and it's tough, right? Like, is Gleyber Torres ever going to be as good as Manny Machado? I don't know, but I don't think the Yankees would move Torres.
I think that is the guy that the Yankees would say no deal.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and we're past the
by teams before, and the Yankees have taken him completely off the table. I think it's very obvious early returns on Torres, which there'll be bumps in the road, but I think early returns on Torres that everybody knows he's going to be an excellent player. He would never have the power that Machado has, and he might not be the elite hitting talent that Machado is, but he can be an elite baseball player, a five-tool player in that he can do all of them well. And I've heard Aaron Boone speak to this. He can do them all well, even if there's not one skill that jumps off the page at you. Mm. He can do everything well. Great fielder, great hitter, some power. There you go. You know, he could be a 20-home run guy. Is he going to be a 40-home run guy like Machado can be? That remains to be seen. So,
and we're past the point, right, though, where we even talk about Gary and Judge being involved in these talks. Because when they first came up, that was a thing. I don't think, I mean, the fact that Machado could even still end up being a rental, it wouldn't be him. It would probably, I mean, it would still be that ever-glorious Mike Trout trade. But are we entirely past the idea of ever entertaining Gary and Judge's names in any of these talks?
Yes.
I think so, too.
Judge is unmovable.
I agree, 100%.
From a Yankees perspective. Sanchez is too good of a hitter for the Yankees to entertain that. You can have frustrations regarding his fielding, which I do, and any Yankee fan does, but that isn't a player that they would look to move because he's way too good of a hitter. It would have to be some sort of crazy confluence of events to do that, and it wouldn't be this season. It would just be a situation where the Yankees felt like, well, no, we can't move Stanton, and we're not moving Judge, and Gary can't catch, and he's not going to make it at first base, so he's a permanent DH, and we need that spot because Stanton is going to have to be there for the future. That kind of thing. But I mean, that is way too many moving parts, and the Yankees wouldn't. You know, they don't have to make this Machado move. They just, I know they love him, and they may want to keep him. He's going to be 26 when the team, whoever gets him, signs him. So you have time for him to enter some of his prime hitting years. That's why he is a unique talent. And, you know, frankly, Bryce Harper in the same way. So there you go, Manny Machado.
One more question quickly.
Manny Machado talking. Yes, absolutely.
From a philosophy standpoint, if you were the Orioles, I mean, really, this would apply throughout all the sports. How do you feel about trading, I mean, an elite talent, no two ways about it, in division? Is that stuff you worry about, or is it just let me get the best return?
I would worry about it. I think the Orioles would be discouraged from trading to the Yankees. They'd be more likely to move him to a National League team.
Would you take
back
less
to
do
the
it?
Johan Santana sweepstakes a bunch of years ago, and the Twins traded Santana to the Mets for a less than desirable package at the time.
Mm.
people thought that the Twins didn't get enough value and that there could have been more valuable offers from notably the Yankees. And I always just assumed it to be that the Twins were motivated to get him out of the American League. The last thing they wanted to do is see him win a World Series for the Yankees or the Sox or whomever. So they traded him to the Mets, and he had some success before he got injured, and you know, on you go. But I think that certainly plays a factor in some teams' minds, but when it comes down to it, with this situation, he's going to be a free agent. They can't control where he's going. So if the Yankees put a legitimate package in front of you, you're crazy not to take it. And right. if you can't stand the heat because the Yankees win the World Series and he was part of it the end of this year, hypothetically, then that's your problem. Your fans are going to have to get – you don't want to tell your fans to get over it, but they're going to have to. It isn't going to work. He's going to leave for nothing. So you better get something for him while you can. And I understand that it could play a factor, but if the Yankees can blow them away with a package, and they can, then they would have to consider it. Who cares that he's probably going to beat you eight more times for the rest of the year?
Absolutely.
They're 11-27. They're a terrible team right now, so they have to consider it. So that's in a Machado. For the rest of that game, let me see who else we got. Yeah, Machado 2-for-6. He was most of the offense. Cisco 2-for-4, 2 runs scored right there. The outings were Kevin Gausman. He goes 7-3. He gave up 11 hits, but he struck out 6, only gave up the 2 runs. So actually a nice outing for him, despite the fact that I'm hammering the pitching. Jacob Feria, tough day. 6 innings, 7 runs. Machado hits both bombs off of him. And that's the deal. So we'll wrap up there on Orioles Rays. We're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit more baseball. Odubel Herrera, the Joey Gallo shift, and a nice moment for Dustin Fowler. We're back on FST on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network talking baseball with Mike Lute and Kevin Walsh.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Love the musical choices. Producer Rob Bowe in. It's first time doing this show with us. Happy to have him on board. We'll talk to him a little bit later in the show. But loving it. Saturday morning, NBA playoffs getting started, Kev. I know you're pumped about that. We're going to talk about that in the third hour. What time are those games today? I got to get the game times.
For what?
I got to get those game times ready for NBA playoffs.
Not today.
Oh, it's tomorrow?
Tomorrow. It's only one game a day. It's one of those things where it's like there's 4 games
every
day.
I thought it was starting
it's too much.
For some reason, I thought it was starting today. I'm all jammed up. Mother's Day coming up. Happy Mother's Day. We're not on tomorrow.
True.
Happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. I got a whole bunch of stuff planned for my wife and my mom and all that kind of stuff. So I hope everybody enjoys their Mother's Day weekend. So, yeah. Tomorrow
happy
is
Mother's Day,
when
Mom.
It gets started. Yep. 3:30. For Celts, Cavs tomorrow. And then that's Warriors, Rockets on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. One game a day. I get it. Celts, Cavs. We'll talk about that in the third hour. We'll wrap up with what happened to the other series, obviously, and talk a little bit about the coaching carousel that happened in the NBA. Dwayne Casey fired by Toronto. Already some names being rumored to go there. So we'll get to that as well. But a little bit more baseball. We talked Max Scherzer. So the funniest thing that I thought, we talked Manny Machado, obviously, but the funniest thing that happened in last night's games was the Joey Gallo shift that was employed by the Houston Astros. So earlier this year, just last month, they had played, and they employed a fourth outfielder. They moved Alex Bregman, third baseman, out to left and kind of shifted everybody over. It's like a softball outfield where you had four outfielders, and then they shifted the infield over. Last night, they played a straight-up outfield. They're playing deep, obviously, because of Gallo's power, but it was a fairly straight-up outfield. But they moved everybody in the infield over to the left side of the infield. The right side of the infield. So Alex Bregman, the third baseman, is shading towards first base on the first base side of the second base bag. So he's playing that just to the, you know, just shading off the pitcher. The shortstop, Carlos Correa, is playing, I'd call it 20 feet off of where a normal second baseman would be. He's on the grass. Jose Altuve is now, I mean, he's 100 feet behind where he would normally play second base, and he is in between Correa and Gurriel, who's the first baseman. So he's basically playing a short right field, and then Gurriel is playing relatively straight up first base. And Gallo hit it to Correa, and it threw him out. So it worked. Is the weirdest alignment I've seen. You can find it online. I'll even try and tweet it out a little bit later. But it is amongst the weirdest shifts I've ever seen. And now, you know, things are getting a little weird with the shifts, but it's not going anywhere anytime soon because they've proven to work. But, man, that was one of the weirdest things I've seen.
Altuve was basically just backup if the grounder was too fast and got past Uriel. It was so wild. I thought the funniest part was that he still grounded out into the shift. It's just so wild to me. I remember, I don't know when the shift exactly started, but I know there's a lot of people that believe that a lot of, you know, just certain pull hitters, like even to the point where they say, like Barry Bonds. I mean, Barry Bonds will still be Barry Bonds, right? Like, doesn't matter if you have a shift on if the ball goes over the fence. But just some of his numbers even would have had to take a dip because, I mean, he didn't have to deal with this.
Of course. And the shift was employed. They call it somebody on air referred to it as the Ted Williams shift. So the shift goes back a really long way. They did employ shifts on players like Ted Williams and others. And then it went out of fashion for decades. I think there were some slight shifts along the way, but it really is in the last few years that we've seen it employed full force now. Obviously, it has a lot to do with analytics and the amount of data pouring in on certain hitters. They can, just like you have the Ben Simmons shot chart in the NBA, which is appalling, you have spray charts for hitters that you can find out, you can get a really accurate depiction of where they hit it. And why are you playing a straight up third base when he literally never hits it to the third baseman?
Yeah.
Can these guys adjust their swing to bunt it down the third base line? Yeah, but is that even really going to keep them honest? I mean, Joey Gallo isn't up there trying to do that. It does seem ridiculous, but he's going to get paid over the course of his career because he can hit 40 home runs, not because he went the other way on a shift and got a base hit, you know? So it's obviously employed in the last few years. It is working. So they're going to continue to do it as much as it seems to bastardize baseball in some way.
Have you seen Joey Gallo's spray chart?
I would imagine, I don't know that I've seen it recently, but I can give you a solid guess of what it looks like.
So I just sent it to you on Twitter, if you could look at it. Someone tweeted it out on May 9th. He hasn't hit a baseball up the middle. Forget to third base or shortstop. He hasn't hit a baseball up the middle. I don't even know why they kept Marwin Gonzalez over there. What's the point?
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, that's his career spray chart, too, that you sent me. It's awesome.
I didn't even read that. He's never hit a baseball up the middle in his life.
Yeah, it's nothing even appears on the spray chart that is at the pitcher's mound. So everything is on an angle He's only utilizes about, I would say, 20% of the baseball field, maybe 25% if I'm being generous. So, you know, why would you? You're right. I mean, Gonzalez didn't even need to be there. I guess he's just there in case of a crazy ricochet or something off the wall. You gotta try and keep him somewhat honest as far as that goes. But yeah, it is wild, and he did ground out. So they continue to have success with it. Next game. So the another player had a big day yesterday. That was Wilson Contreras from the Cubs. He hit two homers, similar to Machado. Did he? Yeah, he hit two homers. One was a grand slam, and then is that right? Yeah, he had seven RBIs yesterday. So four for five, two runs scored, the two homers, seven RBIs. So he actually beats out Manny Machado from a daily production perspective. So big day for him, average at 268. They keep chugging along. 15 hits for the Cubs yesterday. And Fulmer from the White Sox took it on the chin. He gave up five runs there. And a bad day for all around for the White Sox, who are 9-26. I believe that is the worst record in baseball. There's some really horrendous teams. I just got done pounding the Orioles. The White Sox are worse. The Reds aren't far behind. And there you go. So the Cubs, 20-15, you know, they got off to a sluggish start, sort of like the Indians. People are saying the Indians and the Cubs and the Dodgers, those teams will be there in the end. A little bit of a sluggish start, but five games over 500 now. They get the 11-2 win, and they got a bunch of hits. Ben Zobrist, 3-for-6. Chris Bryant, 2-for-3. Two RBIs. He walked a couple of times. Three runs scored. So Chris Bryant's average up to 302. His OPS over 1,000. So got contributions from Rizzo and obviously off to the races there. So Tyler Chatwood goes five innings. He gets the win yesterday, two earned runs, five walks and three hits over five. So he threw a ton of pitches, and he does get the six strikeouts. But pretty good outing for him. Chatwood threw the 92 pitches in the five innings, and they had a lead at that point. So they yanked him, and there you go. So next game, go ahead.
Cubs, just quickly, they got to be kicking themselves for allowing themselves to be swept by the Cardinals, because they're only a game and a half back, and obviously there's a ton of time to fix things, but they came out of it. Played the Marlins, they put up 14, 4, 13, and then they just put up 11 on the White Sox. So offensively right now, the Cubs are clicking on every single cylinder, but a series too late.
Yeah. So, yeah, look, those rivalry types of series are going to take a lot out of you. You don't want to get down. You don't want to take a sweep from your most storied and most historic and most hated rival. But such is the case. The Red Sox avoided that earlier this week against the Yankees, and the Yankees after going 17-1, have dropped two in a row. So they lost to the Sox on Thursday and the A's last night. Sonny Gray continues to amaze me with how much he has been awful. He goes five innings last night, nine hits and three walks, five earned runs, takes the loss. His ERA is a robust 6.39. Hale came in to try to save the day, and he gave up a home run, and Yankees lose 10-5. The best moment of that game last night, however, was Dustin Fowler, former Yankee, who last year entered a game against the White Sox, and in his first ever game, before he even had his first at-bat, crashed into the wall, into an electrical box near the stands as he was going for a foul ball, a fly ball that drifted foul, and tore his patella tendon, and he was out for the year before he'd even taken at bat. A Moonlight Graham-like scenario for those Field of Dreams fans. But he makes it all the way back, and he got his first hit last night for the player that he was traded for, Sonny Gray. So I'm really happy for him. I think a lot of his former teammates and current teammates are thrilled with him. He goes 1-for-5, but that his first major league hit. And a really nice moment in what was a blowout win for the A's.
Yeah, I mean, I always find this, baseball's just so weird. Like, the Yankees get done winning every series against all of the best American League teams. They play the A's, who haven't been as horrible, but, you know, they dropped that first game. The thing about the Yankees is, and I mean, that of course it's true, right, when you win 17 of 18, but It feels like they don't play any games where there's not a moment where they at least have an opportunity to win the game. Like, even with as bad as things kind of look right now, I mean, they lost 10-5. Like, the game looked like it might have got out of hand. But they had, score was 6-5, and they had the bases loaded with their 3-4 coming up. And they weren't able to capitalize. But that's one of the things that winning baseball teams, I feel like they always do, is it just feels like in almost every game, they at least have that opportunity to win. And when you're good enough, most times you're able to capitalize. And that's really what the Yankees are doing, where they're one of those teams where even when they're down, at no point is, you know, you're not leaving the stadium, right? Like, they'd have to be down by an absurd amount of runs to be like, oh, okay, they're not coming back. They've given the fans that much hope, but more importantly, I'm sure that that is something that becomes infectious and important throughout a locker room.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think teams playing the Yankees are always going to be nervous about them coming back to them, and it was 6-5 last night, despite the fact that they had never led. They kept coming back and keeping it close. Got out of hand in the eighth and ninth innings when the A's tacked on another four runs, but you're right. And part of that, you mentioned that they three and four hitters weren't able to capitalize. Part of that is Didi Gregorius, whom I love. He's my favorite Yankee. But he's been in a really rough stretch. His last seven games, he is 2-for-30 with only one RBI. His last 15 games, he's hitting 180, two homers, four RBIs. His last 30 games, he's hitting under 250. So there's some power numbers in there. But Didi got off to a really good start this year. He has cooled off considerably. But such is the nature of baseball. I'm not suggesting he gets moved in the order or anything ridiculous like that. He's hitting 272 on the year with 10 homers. You gotta like the production. You figure the batting average will come up a little bit, and he could be just a streaky hitter right now. So he's on the downside of that right now. I'm sure he'll get it fixed, especially in the middle of that lineup where they give him plenty of opportunities. So that's it for the Yanks right now. I'm trying to think any other significant numbers.
Matt
there
Harvey, right?
So we'll go to that game next. So Matt Harvey goes to L.A. last night. He gets a start. I was listening to a podcast, Buster Olney's podcast on ESPN. He does a good job of sort of going around the league, and I was listening to it just this morning. I was just getting ready for the show, and he was saying his opinion is that this is a worst-case scenario for Matt Harvey for this reason. The Reds are 12-27, one of the worst teams in baseball, even though they swept the Mets, by the way, just within the last week. Bad deal for the Mets. But in any event, he could conceivably have gone. His Buster Olney's opinion, who I respect greatly as a baseball mind, his opinion is that it would have behooved him to go to a team that really could utilize him in the best way possible. Maybe send him back to the minors for a quote-unquote rehab start or two, fix whatever is wrong, conceivably wrong mechanically, and then really kind of look after him as an asset that could help them make a playoff push, win a playoff series, win whatever. Whereas the Reds are just like, yeah, man, we need arms. You can go out there and just, if you pitch well, we're just going to move you for an asset. So good luck these next 6 weeks. And that was an interesting point. My thought process is like, he's far away from New York. There isn't any pressure on him. He's pitching for his life. So maybe it's a good deal for him to get a bunch of starts. Where would you fall on that spectrum?
Yeah, I don't think him going to the minors was ever going to work. I understand, like, perhaps he, the notion that he would be more open to it somewhere other than the Mets, right, because it would be more of a wake-up call. But there's been too many opportunities for the wake-up call moment for Matt Harvey to where I don't think that would have worked. And I like that the Reds, it's a mindset where you still care about how he does, right? Like, you see what he did yesterday. He only threw 55 pitches. He only went four innings, right? So they obviously could have got more out of Harvey. I mean, 55 pitches is nowhere near. And I'm sure I didn't actually get to catch the game, so I don't know if he was slightly bothered that he came out. It wouldn't shock me at all. Like, he probably thought he was going to throw a one-hitter.
I think that's okay, though. Look, that's a lot on your plate for a week. You got traded. You had to move to a new city. You found yourself in L.A., a lot of traveling. Let's get you out there, see some positives. And he throws four innings strong, only gives up the one hit. He obviously doesn't factor in the decision, but they end up, they get a win out of it. They beat the Dodgers, so who are obviously struggling as well. But I think you can take a positive and build on it from there. Then the next start, maybe throw 75 pitches. And the next start, you're in the rotation and you're trying to win ball games. So I think it's okay that they took the pressure off
Absolutely.
Last night.
Like that's my point. It's the fact that the Reds weren't just like, all right, yeah, we got Harvey. Let's just keep throwing him out there and see. Like they, even if their intentions are to at some point flip him for a returning piece, they're still going to treat him with care. And I think that that's important. But I do think more important than anything was him being able to still stay in the majors, right? Like whether Matt Harvey is never going to be good again, whatever it may be. But I know I personally feel very strongly that him going down to the minors was never going to work.
Yeah. Scooter Gennett, 4-for-5 last night, 3 RBIs, hit a homer off Kenta Maeda, took the loss. He drops to 2-3 on the year with a 4.75 ERA. Tough going for Maeda right now, but in any event, Gennett is the offensive star of that game. So we'll come back, we'll talk some more baseball, recaps, previews, and more. It's Mike and Kevin on Fantasy Sports Today. We'll be back right after this. If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
Alongside Mike Blewett here on Fantasy Sports Today. We're going around the MLB right now, and we were just talking about Matt Harvey. And if you're listening, I'd love for you to call in because I'm curious what the people are thinking about Matt Harvey right now. Do you think that he is going to be moving in the right direction, or perhaps, you know, 4 innings pitch, let's not lose our minds. This guy's going to continue to be struggling. So if you're listening, feel free to call into the show because I'm curious to see what everybody has to say about Matt Harvey because I think he is still, despite not being a superstar, I think he's probably one of the more polarizing guys the league has to offer, right? Like Mike Trout, there's nothing polarizing about it. He's just phenomenal. Bryce Harper, some people like, some people love. Matt Harvey's a situation where some people hate him, some people hope he does well, but nobody can probably agree, at least for 100% consistency, whether Matt Harvey's ever going to be good again. So if you're listening, feel free to call in.
So on that front, Rob, Bo, our producer, is a Mets fan, and he's like, of course, Harvey throws 4 strong innings last night before the show. He's not particularly rooting for Matt Harvey. I think there's plenty of Mets fans out there like that. Some, I think, like I mentioned last week, Mike Florio, one of the hosts here on the network and produces a ton of shows too, he is of the age where he's kind of thankful to Matt Harvey that he helped turn the franchise around and he helped get them – he helped win them a pennant just 3 years ago. So I think that is rare. I think most Mets fans are happy to drive him to the airport, but it is what it is. He made his own bed. He's got to lie in it. And it's, you know, on that same podcast I was talking to you about Buster Olney, it was him and Carl Ravitch, and they were basically saying it's all the excuses are out of the way now. It's not the Mets. It's not the way they handled it. It's not the media. It isn't anybody. It's just you and the ball now. And you got to go out and pitch, and you can't blame anybody else because you were given opportunities. The injuries are unfortunate. You were unprofessional in certain regard. You were probably too open with the media at times and caught up in celebrity status. So that's over now. You're not a celebrity anymore. You're a you're an end of the rotation pitcher for the Reds, who are 12-27. So, good luck, and I hope it works out. Like, I'm not rooting for him to be bad. And I know some Mets fans are like, I hope that guy's out of baseball by 2019. So
I don't think anyway. That Mets fans need to feel any specific way. Like, if you're appreciative, like Florio is, cool. If you feel strongly against him like Rob does, I think that's fine as well. He's never going to get the hero's welcome like what McCutchen got back in Pittsburgh, and I think that's at least accurate.
Yeah, that was a cool moment. We'll get to that in a minute. But first of all, Kevin did mention if you want to reach out to us today, do so on the phone by 844-843-6879, on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett, B-L-E-W-I-T-T, and he's at the Kevin Walsh. And if you've listened to us on TuneIn Radio or iHeartRadio or the Fantasy Sports Radio app, we appreciate it. Even terrestrial radio stations across the country, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining the show, and we'd love to have you be a part of it. So beyond that, I'm sure you've heard about the DailyRoto.com Dollar Month here on the network, but I want to put it in context for you. Let's say you buy a lottery ticket. You pay your dollar, you pick a bunch of numbers, that's it. You then clutch the ticket and hope. Now let's say you try DailyRoto.com Dollar Month. You pay your dollar, you get access for 30 days, and you're transported into a world that has produced 5 millionaires. So take destiny into your own hands. Go to DailyRoto.com and enter the code $1. That's O-N-E, dollar. That's DailyRoto.com and enter the code $1. So you were talking about Andrew McCutchen, which is a good segue, because Andrew McCutchen did get a hero's welcome last night in Pittsburgh. Lots of signs, lots of "we love you, Kutch," and all that stuff. Pirates do end it with a win, an 11-2 win over the Giants, who are 19-20, not where they want to be. Pirates are 22-16, perhaps a surprising 22-16. Starling Marte last night, 3-for-5, 2 runs scored and 2 RBIs. Bell goes 1-for-5 with 2 RBIs. Pitching performances, Jameson Taillon goes 3 innings. I believe there's an we're going to do injury updates here at the end of this segment as well, so I'll update you on that. So he leaves the game after only 3 innings pitched. Just gave up the 1 hit. Obviously doesn't factor in. Suarez for the San Francisco Giants, 4 innings, 5 earned runs, 7 hits, 2 walks, gave up a couple of bombs, and those bombs were to Starling Marte and Osuna. So as far as McCutchen goes, he went 1-for-5. Kind of cool. You know, it's nice for a player to come back, and he was an MVP-level player. Then it dropped off dramatically. Mm-hmm. Then he had a little bit of a resurgence, and then they eventually moved on from him. But I think people appreciated the fact that he went through tough times. He tried to gut it out. He never blamed anybody. You know, probably the opposite of what we saw with the player that we're just talking about. He never really blamed anybody. He took the bullets and was a good player and a good teammate, and he represented the team well, and I think that's why he gets the hero's welcome last night.
Yeah, and he deserves it. I always think it is sometimes one of those moments that makes you think, like, that after something like that, that, I mean, think about the chills, right? Like, you could get chills watching that. Imagine that that type of welcome was specifically for you, and then have to get up and try and swing the bat. That's why he struck out looking. Like, I don't think I'd have been able to get the bat off my shoulders going through something like that. I will say, as I watch the video, this is always going to remain true. Andrew McCutchen without the dreads will never be the same, and I will always slightly be like, is that... that's him, right? Like, I'll
yeah, in your mind's eye, he's got dreadlocks. I know what you mean.
You know, that's how I feel about Mike D'Antoni. Like, I always still think he has a mustache. It's a weird thing, but I just, he looks like he still has one, and he doesn't, but it looks like he does.
Yeah, I understand that. So just, you know, to put it in context, I mean, he was top 5 in Rookie of the Year back in 2009, and from 2011 to 2015, he made every All-Star game. He was an MVP in 2013. He was a top 5 MVP from 2012 to 2015. So he was an extremely productive player. And unfortunately, they kept running into Madison Bumgarner in those one-game playoffs, which I hate. And they couldn't really produce anything out of it. So he's moved on now. Currently this season, he's batting .248. He's got 3 homers, 14 RBIs. Not where he wants to be, but it's a transition in a new city and all that kind of stuff. I'm very soft on players. I don't care what they're getting paid. I am pretty soft on players when they make a transition to a new city. Mm-hmm. You'd like for them to pick up where they left off in the previous city, which, frankly, for McCutchen in the last 2 years wasn't great. You know, at the end of that run, to give you a sense, he was a top 5 MVP in 2015. He .292 batting average, 23 homers, 96 ribbies. The next year, 24 homers, 79 ribbies, but hit .256, so nearly a 40-point drop. Then 2017, 28 homers, 279 batting average. So, you know, there's a significant drop-off from his MVP year and some of the other years around it. But we'll see if we can get back. He's only 31, so he's on the wrong side of 30, but he's not ancient by any means. And we'll see if he can, you know, pick it back up at some point during the season. But I'm pretty easy on players making transitions like that, whether it's Giancarlo Stanton or Andrew McCutchen or whomever.
No, I think that that's sound like that. It's one of the things that is always going to be lost on not just fans, but analysts as well. They are still human beings, and I'm not saying that to try to say, oh, feel bad for them, but think about how you react when you have to go through that type of a drastic change of scenery, whether you be moving house, moving occupation, whatever it is, even if you pick up an extra shift, you know, you're at the same job, or you're switching your shifts. Like, it is a drastic change that can mess with your performance, mood, and all of those things. So imagine going from a situation where you were in Pittsburgh forever, right? And then you have to go over to San Francisco. Like, that can be a dramatic change on so many levels, right? Like, not just city to city, right? Like, we're talking time zone, expectations, teammates, you know, management. There are so many things that you now have to get accustomed to, especially when, I mean, pretty much all of McCutchen's time, he was used to what he had in Pittsburgh. So I think that's one of the things, and we're always going to probably overlook it until we need to figure out perhaps why something might be going wrong, right? Like, if Stanton came out of the gate, like that very first game, hit two home runs against Toronto, and I was like, oh my God, he's going to hit 75 home runs, like, no doubt about it. And then he's struggling, and it's like, oh, right. Like, he's having a dramatic change, and those things are impactful. And there's a number of things that are involved.
I do think a big part of it, and look, people are going to say, well, he gets paid $25 million a year. He should have people that are taking care of all that stuff for him. I get it, but they are creatures of habit. They are very used to routines, whether it's, and I was listening to another piece last night, JD Martinez from the Sox, to give me a sense of routine. So he sets up his iPhone in the batting cage during batting practice, and he records every swing, every day, every swing. So he sets up his iPhone on the batting cage, recording his swing. I think he sets up two, they said. So he has different angles. And then he immediately goes back after batting practice and watches it. He's not a feel guy at all. He is heavy video. He watches every swing every day to make sure he's doing the same things right. So that's an example of the types of creatures of habit they are. And if, you know, whether it's your commute change, you live in a different town, it's a different house, all that kind of stuff, I understand that it could throw guys off for a period of time, whether it lasts a whole year or a few months or whatever it might be. So, you know, McCutchen's a free agent at the end of this year. Obviously, his offers will be considerably less than what he's been paid recently. He's about $15 million this year. So we'll see what kind of deal he can get and if he can get the numbers back up. But, you know, you did mention, I meant to make a smooth transition from Matt Harvey to the Mets. I didn't do that, but since we are talking about the Mets, they pull off the win last night. Phillies had a 1-0 lead, an early first-inning home run from Odubel Herrera, who is in the midst of a 40-game consecutive on-base streak dating back to last season. So Odubel Herrera currently hitting 360. He goes 2-for-3 last night with the solo shot in the first inning. The Phillies did not score again. Decent outing from Steven Matz, who goes his typical five innings. He just gives up the one run, but four walks with the five hits, three strikeouts. So gave up some base runners, but was able to manage it. And Hector Neris comes in the top of the ninth, try and retire the side. Not to be discouraged was Michael Conforto, hit a two-run homer, putting the Mets in front. The very next pitch, the player for whom Matt Harvey was traded, and the Mets' new starting catcher, Devin Mesoraco, follow that up. So back-to-back homers for the Mets. They get the W 3-1, and the win goes to Ramos, and Jairus Familia gets the save in the bottom of the ninth. So blown save for Neris, and an unexpected Mets bats were quiet. I mean, the whole night they had only had, six hits. a couple of walks up until that point, and then Neris blows it. That's his third blown save of the season. He drops to 1-3 on the year. So ERAs are tough for closers and relievers because you have a little blow up like this, and your ERA is sky high. But currently, he's sporting a 5 ERA for the Phillies, who have obviously outplayed expectations to this point, 22-16. You know, the funny thing about the Mets is that, I mean, we're here in New York, and they're getting crushed because they're off to an 11-1 start, and here they are at 19-17. But the good news is, there isn't a lot of good news, but the good news is they are 19-17.
Yeah,
they aren't the Marlins or the Reds or the Orioles or some of the other teams that we've talked about early on this show.
Yes, the problem is the team started 11-1 and now they're 19-17. Like that's the you're 2 games above 500 because you were able to start 10 games above 500 and you're now, and again, like it's May, but they're in fourth. It's just, and we know Washington's going to get better, right? So, and let's I think it's fair to say that one of Atlanta or Philly, like it's probably phony for them both to already be at 22 wins, but even still, like we could be at a spot here where the Mets' best case scenario is third place in a division where coming into the year there were expectations. They started 11-1, so then those expectations were at the minimum validated, or people started to get even higher on them. And then, I mean, all of a sudden now it's a situation where the team is sat in fourth, and it just, I think it's tough. This Mets season has already been almost exactly what you expect. Where
now, I want to bring in Rob Bowe. I want to bring in Rob Bowe, our producer, because he's the self-loathing Mets fan, which has become all too familiar in this town. But Rob, they are 19-17. As Kevin said, they are in fourth place. I guess what I would say to you is, it seems like Mets fans are sort of being honest about what the organization actually looks like than being, you know, somewhat encouraged the fact that they're 19-17. They're not out of anything yet.
I mean, I don't really know how I feel about them. The organization, I don't really pay attention too much because I don't feel like they care, especially like the high office, like the Wilpons and them. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about them. I was like very, very on top of them when they were like on fire. But now that they're dwindling down, I'm starting to come back down to earth. I'm actually at earth now. I'm like, I'm in reality. Like the team is bad. They're not good. That's really all I could say about them.
Yeah.
You hear the defeat in the voice, Mike. You hear the defeat.
I think that's how most Mets fans feel because they are 19-17. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate that. So 19-17, but people aren't encouraged about really anything related to this team. They look at the lineup and they say the lineup stinks, and they look at the pitching and say, well, you know, if DeGrom and Syndergaard aren't lights out, then what do we really have? You know, a lot of the narrative here is that they have two pitchers and that's it. Because Conforto, he has the big hit last night, but to this point, he's hitting .207. They went out and got guys like Adrian Gonzalez and Jay Bruce and Todd Frazier because they know they could afford them. They shouldn't operate like a small market team. They do. We all know that's the deal. But they can at least operate like a mid-range team and done a little bit more to improve the team than other than signing value-based veterans. So there you go. The one guy that's really outdone his expectations as Drubal Cabrera, who's currently hitting .326. He had two more hits last night. So I don't want to beat up the Mets too much more. Luckily, we're going to a break soon, so I don't have to. But I think most Mets fans are kind of realistic that, yeah, we're 19-17 and we're not out of anything, but what is the real expectation for this team? Are they not going to go out and get more players? And, you know, that I think that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough spot. It's the defeat in Rob's voice tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, Devin Mesoraco, all-star catcher. Hopefully, we can start that campaign. Maybe we can catch fire here in May and June and make the all-star game. We're going to come back, talk NFL after the break in the hour number 2 of Fantasy Sports Today. We'll be right back.